Hey everyone, welcome to Recovery Rocks. This episode is sponsored by the folks at Sour Humanoid Vinegar.
And
when I say the folks, I mean my partner who just started this amazing vinegar brand. Sour Humanoid is designed for cooking, created by a New York City sommelier who got sober after working at Michelin-starred restaurants and curating award-winning wine lists. This vinegar is an excellent way to make any meal special with very little effort. Check out some of the easy recipes at sourhumanoid.com. And we've had Nick on an episode before. He's, you know, a fellow sober entrepreneur, and we're excited to have Sour Humanoid sponsor this episode.
It's an amazing story, and I will give a brief testimonial just because I don't cook, but I have sent Sour Humanoid gift packs as gifts over the holidays to a couple of my friends who are big cooks, and it got rave reviews. So user tested, customer tested, and all thumbs up. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Recovery Rocks. I'm Lisa. And I know this is a rare occurrence where I am not with my other half, Tawny. Tawny is finishing her book that we've talked to everybody about, Dry Humping, and turning that in. And so for the next 3 weeks, it's going to be me interviewing some very cool, very wonderful sober friends. And today I am so grateful to have Shelby John with us. Shelby is a therapist, recovery coach, and host of the Confident Women podcast, which I've been fortunate enough to be on as a guest. And she's also the author of the new book, Recovering in Recovery, The Life-Changing Joy of Recovery. We and all of her info and links are going to be in the show notes, so you can find her there. And really, one of the things that I think has been really special about getting to know Shelby and talking to Shelby is that the focus of a lot of her work is so much on how it gets better after we stop drinking and getting ourselves to the life that, you know, I always remember hearing the term, we didn't get sober to be miserable. And it's true. And so I think Shelby really gets that. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. Welcome, Shelby.
Hey, thank you so much, Lisa, for having me. This is fantastic.
Yeah. Thank you for coming on. It's wonderful. So let our listeners know a little bit about your journey and, you know, how you got where you are and what you're up to.
Sure. So my sobriety date is July 1st, 2002. I drank like most people probably here, if you've been in the recovery area for any length of time. I was kind of a depressive drunk, right? I just definitely never felt good enough, smart enough, thin enough, pretty enough for any group that I was ever in. And that just kind of lasted even well into my early sobriety years, things I really had to work on. I don't know why I was an alcoholic. I just was. And I just know that's my story. And I went to rehab and I got sober in the rooms of 12-step programs just because that's what was available at that time. We didn't have the benefit of all the wonderful modern day recovery tools today, like Facebook groups and Quitlet and all the things that we have access to today, which I've been finding so fun over the last 5 years or so as I've sort of deep dived into all of that to learn a little bit more and talk to so many women who are getting sober in a variety of ways. I am a therapist. I have a master's in social work. I have a private practice in my home where I specialize in trauma, addictions, and anxiety. And I also do recovery work online through coaching. And I have a Facebook group for women who want to really work on building confidence and emotional sobriety kind of beyond that initial phase of recovery after they've been sober about a year or so. Because like I said to you earlier, I mean, sobriety is really just the beginning, right? You know, we didn't get sober to be miserable. However, we are often miserable, even in recovery, or we struggle. There are challenges. Life happens and it just keeps happening. And I think that that's one of the biggest disappointments. I know for me and a lot of the women that I work with that, you know, it's not all roses and sunshine all the time. I mean, it's much better. You know, things are usually much better when we don't drink or use. but life is still life. And so that time between year one and five, I think, is just such a critical time for most people, because they're really not usually struggling as much with staying sober, right? They're really starting to get more focused on, what do I really want now? Or like, who am I now? Like, what is my identity? What do I like? You know, sometimes it's a lot of relational types of things. Like, we have to clean up those relationships. Maybe they're in a bad one, or they've had nothing but bad ones. And maybe like family things, you know, there's a lot of that that starts to come to light during those time between 1 and 5 years. And of course, this goes beyond that, but I feel like that's a critical time frame. And that's my favorite place to meet women, is really during that time when they're starting to kind of wake up, you know, the fog is being lifted and they're really coming alive to who they are now that they've been in recovery for a little while, and really what they want going forward. And so a lot of times that looks like, you know, confidence and emotional sobriety work. Maybe they can't pinpoint that for themselves, or they don't know that's what it's called, but often that's really what they're kind of searching for. And so doing that work and kind of showing up for people in that way is something that's super important to me and really my greatest passion.
Yeah. I think that is so important. It's so true. I love that. And you know, it's funny, you're talking about, you know, life just keeps on happening. It doesn't matter. You know, you can work the best 12-step program. You can work whatever kind of, or have whatever kind of sobriety recovery practice you have outside of 12-step. And, you know, it's gonna show up at your door, you know, when the time comes. And one of the things that I think has been most valuable, and I think when you get through some of those like initial hurdles and you look back, I know I always say that, you know, the thing I'm most proud of in my recovery was having been able to be there for my dad as he was in his last weeks on hospice and showing up for that. And, you know, those kinds of things that I was only able to do that because I was sober. And, you know, in a way, you know, we talk a little bit, and I know you help women get over or come to terms with some of the wreckage of their past. And one way that we can do that is by sort of living amends and living a sober life where we do show up, you know, and we are there. And I think that is, you know, that's something that I had no idea would be the case early, right? It's easy, or, you know, early on, it's like, okay, you know, I mean, for me, I had a pink cloud, but, you know, not everybody does. And it's hard to see that some of the hard lessons and the hard work you're doing early will better equip you later.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I feel like what you're saying about showing up is so important, but because it's hard though, you know, and sometimes the blessings of sobriety really show up in those hard moments. You know, when we make the difficult decision to be at someone's bedside or to make a meal and take it to them, or to sit with somebody over coffee and listen to their very difficult situation. You know, I mean, these are things that oftentimes people are just very uncomfortable with because it's uncomfortable. You know,
yeah.
And when we're living in active addiction, it's super easy to check out. Either you show up at those things and you're certainly under the influence, or you don't at all and you have like the greatest excuse of all.
Exactly. I always say, like, if that had happened, if my dad had gotten sick when I was still drinking, I would have been sitting on a bar stool crying about the fact that my father was dying instead of being there, you know? One thing I also wanted to ask you about when we talk about like the hard things over time is parenting. You know, neither Tawny nor I are parents, so we don't talk much about how that impacts, you know, obviously it doesn't impact us, but I know a lot of our listeners, you know, do have kids. And what would you say to them about what your experience has been, or what you've seen generally with parenting? I know it's a massive subject, but you
I'm
know.
Just laughing because it is such a big deal. I mean, I have three teenagers in my house right now. You know, don't be jealous, anyone. actually one now is at college. She left about a month ago, my oldest. When I got sober, 6 months later, I was pregnant with my first child. And then 9 months later, I was pregnant with the second one. And then 2 years later, I had the third one. So I had 3 kids in 4 years. I was 4 years sober and definitely not prepared for all of that. I did it a little bit backwards because, you know, I got pregnant so quickly and I was jumping right into the whole motherhood thing. You know, I'm not sorry about it, of course. It's amazing, but it definitely made things maybe a little bit more challenging than they could have been had I just been a little bit more stable emotionally. Parenting has been, it's a huge part of my story. It's basically the whole premise of my book, really, because it's a, my book is really a memoir about living in recovery. It's not too much of my drunkalogue, although we have to qualify ourselves a little bit. But parenting has been my greatest joy and blessing, and also some of my greatest heartaches. You know, I've never been hurt by anybody more than my children, probably. Yeah. And it is, that's very, that's something that's not spoken about very often that I found in my communities. And now maybe I had the wrong friends, you know, I don't know, but people don't tend to always tell the truth. And so I felt that I had a lot of loneliness during that time. I wanted to be deep and introspective and talk about the real stuff, you know, that was going on with my feelings and my children and my marriage. And sometimes when I did things like that, you know, I got the glassy eyed stares and like the kind of look like, oh yeah, we don't do that here, you know? And I like the message that basically said like, no, we don't talk about that. And so that was very hard for me because I really wanted to be that. I wanted people like that in my life. And so I think it can be a very lonely time. It can also be super exciting. I mean, I had the greatest joy when the kids were school age, you know, I was participating in their schools. I was volunteering. I went on field trips, you know, but all the life stuff happens with them too. You know, they have their own pain, you know, and the last 4 years or 5 years raising teenagers, we've seen a lot of that. Of course, COVID didn't help. And, you know, kind of walking through life, experiencing their pain has been so difficult, you know, because as a mom, we feel all that too. Like it's, we feel it all, you know, I think there's a phrase that says something like, you know, we're only as good as our most hurting child. And I feel like that is so true, you know? And it's going to test your sobriety. I mean, I don't feel like for me, my sobriety was ever in jeopardy because I've never really had a lot of desire or craving to like pick up and use or drink. But because of my nature, I did find other ways to soothe myself, you know, like with food or, you know, numbing out with, you know, social media or Netflix. I mean, so I definitely had learned some, you know, unhealthy coping skills that looked very much like addiction to help deal with some of that parenting stuff because it is very, very challenging. I guess my suggestion always is to find your people, you know, find right. your community where you feel you can be honest. And admittedly, that is still a struggle for me. I mean, I find that you know, I'm always seeking that out. I'm always seeking the women that I can actually be honest with. And you have to be cautious with that when you have children, because sometimes your confidences aren't kept, you know, or it's just a tricky time, right? But it's also such a wonderful experience to be sober and to model. So this is interesting. I went to my oldest goes to West Virginia University, and it's obviously a D1 school and all the things, right? So we went there this weekend to go to the football game with her and her friends and do the tailgating thing. And we took my daughter, my son, my other daughter's a senior. My son is a freshman in high school. And so we took them all, and we had, you know, wonderful time, of course, visiting with her, and we're doing the tailgate thing. And at some point we decide we're going to start walking, and we go to the student lot, you know, and we get there and there's like tons, thousands of students everywhere. And they're, of course, they're all been like drinking all day. There's trash all over the ground. It's just like insane, you know, like just crazy kids, you know, young adults. And, you know, and I'm looking at all this and like, again, it doesn't really affect me personally. Like I'm not sitting here going like, oh, I want to drink. How it affected me this time, which was a little bit surprising and took me aback, was, you know, thinking about my kids, you know, because they're in this environment, or at least one is, this next one is going to go somewhere next year. And the challenges that they face, you know, with being exposed to substances, I mean, they've already been exposed throughout high school and had a lot of experiences. But my point in bringing it up is that I'm able to on a regular basis model a sober life. Like, I know how to have fun without drinking. I've been to Jazz Fest in New Orleans twice. I've traveled many places. I've go to concerts. I go to festivals, birthday parties, all the things. And I don't drink, right? So, I mean, they're going to make their own choices, but I feel very good about being the kind of person that's been able to show them that you don't need to have substances to have fun or have a beautiful life.
Yeah, I mean, that is so great to hear that way, because I know I hear other women that I know, you know, that go through those things, and I've been sober 18 years, and so I've seen sponsees, you know, raise children in sobriety and struggle when their children struggle with those kinds of things, but they're that model. You know, they know what it is, and they know there's somebody, they know that their parent is always, you know, there for support in that kind of way. I think it's, you know, it's a real, and what a gift to your kids to be a sober parent.
I think so too. I mean, I think, you know, time will tell what their story is. I mean, so far they seem to have really good heads on their shoulders. They like to, be in control of themselves and have a good time, but also not be unsafe. And I hope that continues for all of them. But yeah, mostly it's about presence for me. You know, I don't have to worry about getting the phone call from them late at night and being able to go pick them up. I have family members and friends that wouldn't be able to do that.
Exactly.
And that's scary for me, you know, or the thought that I have before they were driving, just having someone else pick them up. You know, I know adults drink. They go out on Saturday night and they drink. So sure. I always was the pickup person. I don't care how, I said, I will pick them up. I want my kids in the car with me, because I don't want them in the car with someone else not knowing if they've been drinking.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. It's true. And I think, you know, for all our friends out there, all our listeners who are parents, really, I know, like I said, we don't have the opportunity to have this conversation a lot on the podcast. So, you know, Shelby is a really wonderful, really valuable resource on all of this. So I would really encourage you, reach out to her, get the book, listen to the podcast. It's all great. So one of the things that I love about your podcast and about your approach is the idea of confidence, right? And of helping women build confidence in themselves and in recovery. And I, you know, at the beginning, you mentioned always having felt like I wasn't enough. I wasn't good enough. I wasn't pretty enough. I wasn't smart, whatever it is. And that was my story too. And that was one of the things that I absolutely related to in 12-step out of the box was that I thought it was just me. And then you walk into a room, and whether it's 12-step or whether it's any other thing, I think it's very common in any kind of support group to, you know, to feel connected on that particular level, because it was such a relief to learn it wasn't just me, you know, because when we're alone, and you touched on loneliness, it all goes, for me, I always describe the addiction as there's one component, which is the physical one, where, you know, getting more and more physically addicted and going down that drain. But there's a parallel spiral that goes on where, you know, we're trying to cover up our lack of confidence or our imposter syndrome, whatever it is. And that it becomes a vicious cycle, because then we you know, we drink to mask it, and then we shame ourselves for drinking, and then we regret it, and we, you know, do something where we don't show up or we miss whatever it is. It's just this spiral down emotionally as well. So when you meet somebody, when you, you know, have somebody come in who said you can I see out of the box is coming to you with those kinds of issues, how do you work with them?
So everything you said is so spot on. And confidence, I think, is something that is a term that really needs to be all-encompassing, meaning it means feeling comfortable and kind of empowered, I guess, in your own skin. But also it means being able to stand up for yourself, being able to assert yourself. And some of it's an inside thing. You know, you might actually be doing that on the outside, but a lot of it is an inside feeling, like a lot of self-love. So it's a one word concept that I think kind of embodies all of those things. Sometimes we don't remember all that. So when I work with women, a lot of times what's happening is they kind of get like frozen, you know, they're like frozen in their life. Not always, but sometimes, like, you know, I really want to be able to change my health, but I say I'm going to do this thing and then I just don't. I end up, you know, watching TV all night. Or I really want to get out of this relationship, but then I find myself, you know, forgiving again and like I'm stuck here again, you know? They kind of just stay stuck. So a lot of my work is sort of identifying their actual desires of their heart, really challenging them to think about that self-identity piece that I already mentioned about who am I? You know, what do I like? Because I hear that from a lot of women. They're like, I don't even know who I am now that I'm sober and I'm living this life. And again, that can last well into like after a year, you know, that's when they're really saying it. Who am I now? And so we start to talk about that. Well, what are the kinds of things that you liked when you were young? Think back when you were a younger girl or even through high school or prior to now. What kinds of things did you like? Did you love creating things? Were you an artist? Did you love crafts and drawing and, you know, make-believe, you know? Or were you a little more mechanical? Did you like taking things apart and putting them back together or, you know, playing with blocks and building things? Like just kind of identifying, did you like being outside? Did you like being a little more by yourself and reading or with friends? And because what happens is a lot of times, despite whatever our childhood looks like, even if you had a horrible childhood, you have some of these things, right? There were some things that you had that you liked that were good. And we lose a lot of that as we age and stage through adulthood because of all the things, right? School, jobs, relationships, drugs and alcohol. And so it's kind of like a going back to where we came, or at least using that as an identifying factor in what we might like now. So if you tend to be a little bit more of a creative type, okay, that's awesome. So let's tap into that. What is an adult version of that? Well, maybe I will take a paint class, you know, or I want to learn how to do photography. Or, you know, if you were a little bit more introverted, but now you're really struggling because you're in like this high pressure job and there's always people around and you're like constantly being entertained and entertaining and it's just really sucking you dry. It's like getting back to those roots. Well, actually, I'm the kind of person who needs a lot of quiet time to refill my bucket. So identifying some of that is a key beginning of our work. And then also kind of considering, once we know what some of our kind of goals, for lack of a better term, or things that the desires of our heart really are, you know, like backing into it a little bit more, like, what will it take for you to get that? So meaning, I had a great conversation with another woman yesterday, and we were chatting about this, and she said something brilliant, which was, you know, instead of adding something, and I'm a big adder, but I usually do it in a very sustainable way. Instead of adding something to your life, what can you take away that's going to directly support this goal?
I love that.
So if you have the goal of running a marathon, that's always what I use. If you have the goal of running a marathon, okay, that's great. And so I would say you want to tap into the why of that, like, why do you want to do that and stuff? It's not usually one thing, right? It's usually deeper than that. But if this initially, if you're saying, I want to run this marathon, and you know, it's going to take, you're going to have a 20 week training plan. It's going to require this amount of time each week. What can I take away off my plate that's going to help directly support this goal? And it might be something like watching TV at night, you know? And yeah, it's not about the watching the TV. It's a little bit more about creating the space to have a really serious evening routine so that you get to bed on time and you sleep really well so that you can get up in the morning for your run.
Yeah, that's so smart. Yeah, I think that is, and that's the kind of thing that for a lot of us, I think is kind of outside the box of us thinking about, right? Because part of it, I feel like so many women and, you know, and men, all through our lives, and certainly your drink, it's like, okay, I'm supposed to do this. I'm supposed to do that. This is part of my routine. So my routine is, say if I want to run the marathon and I need to build space in my life, I know that for me, I watch TV, you know, I struggle, as I've talked about on this podcast, with my paying too much attention to politics and the news. And, you know, if I said to myself, I want to run this marathon, but that means I really can't be all jacked up at 10 o'clock from getting riled up watching, you know, watching the news. Let me see what it feels like to take that away. And, you know, maybe when I was going to turn on the TV, pick up a book that's going to help me fall asleep earlier and, you know, get that night's sleep in that way, allowing me to get up in the morning and do what I'm doing. But also realizing that those things that are just these deeply ingrained habits that we just do without thinking don't have to stay that way.
And also, I think it's important that routines, transforming habits and routines is like literally the whole second module of my program, because it's that important for a variety of reasons. One, it builds confidence because we start to learn how to trust ourselves. And so building trust in yourself is a huge part of like literally the brain learning to do that. But then you having pride and not being so in those like self-defeating ways. So, but we can, it's important to recognize that sometimes we all have habits and routines. We all have them. It's just that they're not always the best ones, right? I mean, if you're a smoker, you have a habit of smoking. That is a habit. Well, it's not super healthy to be doing that, but it is a habit. So checking in with your habits and routines on a regular basis to see which ones of these are sort of negative or harming me, and how can I transform them to be a little bit more a little bit more focused on how it's going to serve me to get to that next thing. And it can be in all areas. It can be relationally, it can be in our health, it can be in our work environment. I mean, all kinds of things like that. Where we can be using these kinds of tips and tricks to see what we can take away from our life in order to get this one thing. Sometimes it feels like a big sacrifice, like, oh, like now I can't scroll TikTok all night. Like that's super annoying because I really like TikTok, you know, and I can't lay here for an hour and do that. But when you begin to achieve the, you know, sustainable steps that are going to lead you to that desire of your heart, it's kind of going to be worth it. And then you'll see that it's worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would tell me what you think about this. But one of the other things, like sticking with the marathon analogy, right? You decide there's something you want to do in recovery. I have a sponsee who is, you know, a couple years in, and she had decided she was really thinking about doing this almost like she's a real athlete and doing this ultra marathon kind of thing. And it just seemed like so much with all the other things that were going on in her life and everything, but there was something really pulling her to it. And my sort of advice and what we talked through on that was like, listen, I get, and you can say if I, you know, not an elite athlete, was going to, you know, try and run a marathon and set that as a goal. And I said to her, this is great, sign up, do all the things, start the training, but know that if this doesn't work for you and this is, you know, this training is too intense for you to do what you need to do with your job and with your child and with your own mental health, it's okay to say, okay, I've decided I'm not going to run that ultra marathon, you know, and instead, and that is what happened. But instead, what she did was she started, running with a blind runner and being the blind runner's guide on a half marathon first and then a marathon, like very you know, which I think to her has become more fulfilling than if she had, you know, done this other crazy thing that would have really been, you know, taxing to every other aspect of her life. Like, we don't have to have fixed, we're not a failure if our goals kind of shift. Or, you know, I think it's actually, it takes courage and takes, you know, self-awareness and bravery. And it's an act of self-love to say, okay, this isn't for me, but this is, you know, to be able to do that and not feel like, well, I signed up, I have to do it. What are people going to think?
Yeah, look, I mean, I've been an athlete my whole life, and I've had experiences like that. And I think what you're trying to say is we have to extend grace to ourselves.
Yes. You know,
we have to be willing to extend grace to ourselves. But honestly, that is a skill that I think takes a tremendous amount of time. And honestly, I think therapy and coaching to learn did for me anyway.
Yeah.
I was definitely, even in recovery, I started running longer distances when I was, 32 maybe. And so I was sober for 4 years, 5 years at the time after I had my son. And mm-hmm. I started running longer distances, but I was still in like definitely a lot of negative thinking patterns. I had come a long way, but my relationship with myself was not nearly as strong and as loving and kind as it is today. So I still would beat myself up. I trained for my first marathon completely by myself. I was very hard because I come from that kind of way, you know, where it's tough. You know, the second one was a little, they all got a little bit better over the time. But I was very, very hard on myself, extremely. And it was hard for me to accept any mistakes or missed goals or whatever. But it got better over time as I learned how to be more gentle and kind with myself. But again, that did not happen on my own. I needed a lot of help for that, to the point where the last marathon that I registered for, was Philadelphia. I ran that marathon like 2 times already. My husband was also there. I had struggled with a lot of injury in my training in like August. That race is in November, right before Thanksgiving. And in August, I had like a lower leg injury that was pretty severe. I was treating it, doing the best that I could. I was trying to muddle through. I was doing okay, but I was just struggling. And as we got closer and closer to race time, I was just like, I don't really know how this is going to go. I mean, we're already registered. You paid for it. We're going anyway. So I'm like, I'll just go and just do my best. Like,
yes.
Do what I can. And it made me think of your girl. Like, I just showed up there because I had already done those things and I'll see what happens. And I was in such a different space that time versus the first couple times where I was capable of doing that. The first couple times in that space, I would have probably said, either really hurt myself by forcing something, or I would have probably not shown up for fear of not doing what I, so I ended up having my first DNC, I guess, did not complete, right? I didn't complete it. I ran about 18 miles. I ran until it was time to go up to the up Manayunk, which is like the a part of Philadelphia that's really cool, but you get to that top of that hill and then you turn around, that's about mile 20. But it's still a long way down, right? And I knew I probably shouldn't head up because I didn't think I was going to be okay. So I made the very difficult decision to stop that race at that time. And you know what? Like at that point, thankfully, I was in a space where I could accept that and be able to say, you know, this is really disappointing. I'm really sad this happened. But I showed up.
Yeah.
Like it was a completely different view, right? I showed up, I did something. I ran 18 miles, you know, I did something. It wasn't what I was hoping for, but it's okay. You know, no one is going to die from this. I didn't implode. I didn't lose any friends, you know? So the time between when I started and then it was probably about 10 years, right? So the growth that happened is pretty incredible.
Yeah, that is a great story because that really encapsulates, I think, so many of our experiences being able to. And I think some of it, or, you know, for me, the only way that you get there is by sort of showing up each day and kind of doing the work. And also being in, I think the way you thought about it, it reminds me of what my sponsor used to say to me when you said, nobody's going to die, nobody's whatever. Whenever I would have something going on, she would always say to me, it's not arms and legs. It's not arms and legs. And it's true. Like that really is helpful. And, you know, I think I would have, you know, had I been a runner like that, you know, I think I would, it would have taken what it took for me to be able to get to that point that you got to as well. So
I think the point too, is it's not that it wasn't painful. That was still sad. I was still,
sure. Oh,
I was still very sad that that happened. You know, I mean, I was disappointed, but I didn't go to that place where it was like self-deprecating, where I was like, you're a loser. You suck at running. You had no right. business being out there. I mean, that's the kind of stuff. That's the way I spoke to myself in my younger
yeah.
days.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
And I think that now, like in the past 4 years, like I said, it's been very difficult, just in a variety of ways. Also very joyful, but a lot of just challenge. I heard another influencer talk about one time about being soul tired. You know, she was going
yeah.
through something and she said, my soul was tired. And I thought, this was a couple of years ago, and I thought, oh my gosh, I think that's what I'm experiencing. I was so just heartache and just hurting for my kids and just struggling with just how do I navigate this? How do I show up? And I was so just drained from all that.
Yeah.
But I had these commitments to myself. Like I committed to myself that I would do certain things every day. I'm going to move my body for at least 20 minutes. I'm going to drink my gallon of water a day. And so in order to not break my commitments, and this is a huge amount of growth to get to this point, you know, there were some mornings when I showed up at the gym at 5 a.m. because that's what I do every day. And I just laid on the mats and stretched.
You know? Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
Or I just walked on the treadmill on like level 4 or 3, you know, like I just, because that's what I could do, but at least
I would be my normal level.
I would stand there and say, I'm here, I made it here, and I'm doing what I can. And that's the kind of growth that can happen when you start to commit to the work of emotional sobriety and move beyond just that initial phase of recovery.
That is so true. And that to me is where we find serenity. And we find peace, you know, because we can make peace with ourselves and with the, you know, fully accepting that we're not perfect. We're never going to be perfect. Nobody is. Nobody else is. And that's okay. So
we can and we should make peace
with
ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. You are on Recovery Rocks. So, of course, we must talk music. And so is there anything in particular that has been either like a soundtrack to your recovery or that you're listening to now or any kind of music that in particular has inspired you?
So I like all music. My playlists are very eclectic, everything from sort of contemporary Christian music to classic rock to rap music. I have a very eclectic palette. I think recently, what's really been one, I love worship music. I just think it's very inspiring and it's kind of uplifting. And I find a lot of peace and comfort in that related to my own recovery and just serenity in general, kind of connection to a higher power. So for me, a lot of times I go out on my afternoon walk or I'll jog and I put on like some kind of a contemporary Christian playlist. And it just makes me feel good. It kind of grounds me and it gives me a little bit of a connection. It kind of deepens my experience.
And where would we find that?
So I belong to Spotify. I just type in like contemporary Christian music or worship music, and then I'll just play around with it because some of it is not that, doesn't speak to me very much, and some, you're not going to like all things. And then I just create my own playlist off of the songs that I hear that I really like.
Yeah.
And then I'll just like kind of keep doing that, keep adding more.
Yeah. Yeah. And what do you listen to with like, who is like someone in rock or rap that you like?
Well, I love like Bob Seger and Elton John and John Mayer. I mean, I love, I like all the girl rappers right now, even though they're really dirty, but they're fun. Like my gym music is definitely full of that kind of stuff. You know, like this morning I was kind of lifting with like some pretty intense, like City Girls, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's fun.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Yeah, I think it's funny because both Tawny and I also have sort of these eclectic tastes and in music. And I find myself listening to now, particularly in meditation, but even when I'm just going to bed at night or something, high frequency sounds that are from basically at the frequency that Gregorian monks chanted at. And it's really just like it does something to calm my brain down. And I love it.
I use those too. I use sleep meditation every single night with my headphones. And
yeah,
while I'm working in my office, like doing paperwork or whatever, I used to watch Netflix. I think I'm older and my ADHD or something is it doesn't allow that anymore. It's too much. So now I'll put on like focus music or focus sounds, and that helps.
Yes. Yes. Great. Well, Shelby, thank you so much for coming on Recovery Rocks. This has been awesome. I love talking with you. I could talk to you forever.
Aww.
And so everybody, like I said, all of Shelby's links, her website for coaching, her book, her podcast, they're all in the show notes. So please go check them out. And Shelby, have a wonderful day. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It's been awesome. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening. We hope you like what you heard. If so, please hit subscribe and consider rating and reviewing us so others can find us. Tawny, how can our listeners find you?
You can find me at Tawny M. Lara on all of the social medias. You can find my blog, Sobriety Party, sobrietyeaparty.com. Lisa, how can we find you and your amazing book?
My book is Girl Walks Out of a Bar, and it is available at bookstores everywhere and online. And you can find me at lisasmithadvisory.com. And I'm on social media at Girl Walks Out. Thanks for listening.